Oye tú.
Donde salimos todos se pega. Don Miguel hoy secreto.
You're listening to this week's podcast by the not so famous sports report. Your hosts, Austin Fine and Nicholas Jarvis.
Detrás de mí siempre atrás de payola. No me fronte panita mi hueche pa allá. Todo el mundo está claro de ti bigote. Que tú no eres de cuánta presión tú no te buscas.
Welcome back to the Not So Famous Sports Reporters Podcast. My name is Austin Klein, here alongside Nicholas Jarvin once again.
What's up, guys?
We are bringing you the 9th episode of our podcast today.
9 already? We're almost to that milestone number 10.
Yeah. First off, we'd like to say sorry for not getting it out this weekend like we normally would, but I've just been awfully busy.
Austin's you know, fault.
Work, and unfortunately more work. Got some bills to pay. But, you know, gotta get that money, gotta stay on that grind once in a while. So, at any rate, we are bringing you it tonight on Monday, November 3rd. November 3rd, 2014. So, here we go.
The reason we picked the song that led into today's show is because Oscar Tavares used that as his walk-up music in his first and only season in the MLB this year. And Oscar Tavares was killed this previous Sunday, but the Sunday before, October 26th, in a car accident in the Dominican Republic. Tavares was only 22 years old, and he, of course, had immense potential. He was one of the top prospects, according to Baseball America, every year in the whole MLB. And he was supposed to be the future of the Cardinals, basically. And, you know, of course, a ton of potential is now gone, but more importantly, a human life is gone. And it's a really sad story, I think. I mean, baseball players don't usually die during their active career. It's pretty rare that you see it. And, you know, it's just amazing because a little over a week before, Tavares hit the homer and St. Louis tapped the game against the Giants when he pinch hit. And I've seen a lot of things say that it was his last at-bat, but he actually had 2 at-bats after that were both pinch hits in San Francisco. And he got a hit in the first one, grounded out to the pitcher near the last career MLB at-bat. But it's just amazing that, you know, he was just playing, you know, a week before, and of course he went home for the offseason, and a week later, you know, he got in a tragic accident. So, I mean, Tavares will be remembered for the immense potential he had that we never got to see, and just, you know, the sad story that it was, you know, it was just a car accident. It wasn't really anybody's fault. It happens. And the roads in the Dominican Republic, from what I've heard, because I've never been there and I don't know anybody from there, but I saw Pedro Martinez tweeted after the incident that the roads there are pretty bad. And I read a statistic that the roads in the Dominican are some of the most dangerous, if not the most dangerous roads in the world. So, obviously, hopefully this accident of a high-profile person will maybe get some people to make the road safer there on a non-sports note. But, I mean, it's just so sad, and I don't even really know what to say because it's a 22-year-old dying. And me and Austin are he's not even 5 years older than us. So, I mean, it's just pretty tragic. It's just a really tragic thing, and we wish Tavares and his family the best. I sent out a tweet afterwards, and we just wish his family the best because it's crazy in this time. And his girlfriend also passed away in the accident. I think that's important to note because she was a person too. And a lot of times people forget that when big accidents happen, they only focus on the high profile. But it's just a sad story all around. And Tavares hopefully will be remembered forever. And hopefully the Cardinals can do something cool for an opening day.
Yeah, there was definitely a very sad, tragic accident. Me and Nick both offer our condolences to his family and his, you know, his closest friends, his teammates that will definitely have a little bit of a grieving process. And his girlfriend and himself left behind their 1-year-old son who wasn't killed in the accident. So he's going to have a little bit of a tough time. You know, he's only one, but he still knew who his parents were. So
just a sad story, but we wanted to make sure to incorporate that in the show, of course, still. And we wanted to use his at-bat music because that's the best way we know how to honor him. So I think now we're going to head into some sports news on that note.
All right, since Nick and myself are both Michiganders, as we are commonly referred to. We, of course, are fans of Michigan and Michigan State football teams. I'm a Michigan fan, Nick's a State fan. This segment is going to focus on, you know, of course, the victory of the Spartans over my Wolverines, and talk about the playoff chances of Michigan State as the second week rankings are, I believe, coming out today for the college football playoff.
Yeah, I think it's coming out on Monday.
Yeah. So basically, we're going to talk about a little recap of the game, MSU's playoff chances, because obviously Michigan has none. Zero. Zip. Nada.
I think the most important thing about Michigan now is what if Hoke's coming back, and then, of course, their quarterback situation. But they just fired Brandon after the email scandal happened, and so that's pretty big for them. I don't think they care who the next AD is. One thing that always amazed me is, like, ADs and managers usually almost always played at the school. I always thought that was kind of silly, because I'd want a knowledgeable person over someone who played, but Dave Brandon was obviously pretty much a joke as a AD after the whole Hulk and Morris incident when he had the concussion, basically, and they kept him in the game. So that's the good news for Michigan, at least out of this, I guess, out of getting their butts kicked again, really. And then Michigan State, I think their biggest thing going forward is they got to play Ohio State this week because their bye week was this week, and they're looking pretty, it's pretty smooth sailing as long as they can get past Ohio State, which is a home game. They got to stop Barrett. And I think this Ohio State team is still a little bit weaker than the one last year. Michigan State's team obviously might not be as great as it was last year with the defense and such, but I still think that they're better than Ohio State. And I think that they're going to, if I had to make a prediction on the game, I'm going to go MSU 35-24.
All right, so before we move into the predictions and the outlook for the rest of the season, we want to talk about the quick recap of the game. Of course, Michigan State beat Michigan 35-11. You know, there's a couple stats. MSU, you know, 22 first downs compared to Michigan's 13. State's defense held up, really well against Michigan, only 11 points. Rushing yards, they crazily outrushed, I don't know if that's a word or not, but
yeah, it is.
They outrushed Michigan with 219 rushing yards compared to Michigan 61. And I think that's a big part of MSU's game this year is being able to run the ball down, you know,
yeah,
establish that running game.
They had Langford, they have a couple of running backs that are capable of coming in and taking some carries and doing a pretty good job. They have, they have Langford, who's a pretty good rusher, and then Dalton Williams, he's came in and he's been kind of almost like a secret weapon because he's behind Nick Hill on the depth chart, too. And there's Nick Hill and who's like a backup, you know, like a guy who can relieve Langford. And then, of course, RJ Shelton, he's more of a guy that I think they use kind of as a running back. And I don't know how they use Shelton, really. He's kind of, he's an interesting guy, but they've got some good running backs, for sure. And if Connor Cook gets a little more mobile, they'll have pretty much a deadly running game.
In the Michigan game, Langford had 177 yards and 3 touchdowns, and while averaging 5.1 yards per carry, which is above average, of course. Tony Lippett, not a big surprise. He had 103 yards receiving and added another touchdown to the 35-11 score.
Yeah, he still had 4 really capable receivers, and then Big Josiah Price is a great tight end option, but Lippett, Rainbridge, Kings, Mumphrey, they're all capable receivers. Of course, Lippett's the cream of the crop when it comes to that. They just have a solid all-around team, and I like their chances for the playoff because of that. But yeah, they showed it. Michigan actually scored their first touchdown since 2011 against MSU. It was a little over 11 quarters that they went without a touchdown, if you count like all the time up together. So that was pretty crazy, and I was going to say one other fact, and it totally slipped my mind right now. I'm going to remember it in a second. But they basically shut down Michigan, and they shut down and basically kind of bullied Devin Gardner again. He only had a 50% completion rating. And Devin Gardner pretty much summed up the Michigan season with that little foot pass. I don't know if you saw that, the bull foot pass where he was about ready to get sacked, he was trying to get rid of the ball, and he got intercepted. That was a pretty big play. So for Michigan State, that was pretty much a microcosm of Michigan's year so far. So that's pretty much the recap on the game.
So then we're going to move into talk about a little bit of what we think their chances are to make the college football playoff.
Yeah.
I know we have a little bit, slightly, a slight variance in opinion here.
Yeah. Well, I think the SEC is vastly overrated. I actually read an article on Deadspin, which is one of my favorite sites, and it took me a minute to get it, but Austin, we got it because there was a graph that confused me a little bit. But basically, there's the R plus minus rating. That measures basically how efficient and good a football team is. And then all the teams are ranked on that site by it, and it compared it to their AP ranking. And the SEC got averaged 3 spots higher in the AP ranking than they did in that R plus minus rating. So the SEC, of course, is going to have, there's a little bit of an SEC bias. Okay. Basically, the way I'd put it is the SEC is the best conference in college football, but they're still a little bit overrated. That's how I'd say it.
Of course, so, by the media and all their writers.
So that's going to put Michigan State at a disadvantage. There's that part of it. But if they beat Ohio State, they've got pretty big wins against 2 teams, Nebraska and Ohio State. And then even though the Oregon loss looks really bad because they lost by 19, they were winning that game into the third quarter. They just basically broke down, which I know, you know, the final score looks bad, but if you're, you know, this college football player, they have to be looking at every aspect of it. And that Oregon loss actually really looks a lot worse than it was, I think. But if they beat Ohio State, they're basically going to win they're going to win out because Maryland, Rutgers, Penn State, none of those teams look really that competitive. I mean, Penn State and Maryland, their game was almost a joke last Saturday. And they're both average teams, and Rutgers is a little bit better, I think, but Michigan State can run circles around Rutgers still. So their big game is, of course, this Saturday night against Ohio State, but it's at Spartan Stadium, and like I already explained a few minutes ago, I think that they have a really good chance to win that game. So if they win out, they're going to be 11-1, right? They're going to be undefeated for and Big Ten play for the second straight year. So they're probably going to face Nebraska. Looks like in all likelihood again in the Big Ten Championship, which would be good if they beat Nebraska again, if Nebraska wins their games out. So I guess Michigan State fans almost not only have to root for Michigan State, but after this, they have to root for Ohio State to win out, besides the game that Michigan State plays them, obviously. They have to root for Nebraska to win out, and then Michigan State to beat them again in the Big Ten Championship. And that'll be the best possible scenario as far as their schedule goes for the rest of the year.
Yeah, to build on their resume, you know, they had 2 big victories against Eastern Michigan, Jacksonville State. Of course, the loss against Oregon. I agree that loss at Oregon, might I add. It looks pretty bad, but it wasn't as bad as it looks on paper. I think the big thing is they only beat Nebraska by 5 points, which, you know, it was a victory nonetheless, but they're going to have to do it again. And to make that victory convincing enough over Nebraska, that's the question. Can they do that? I mean, they're going to have to play on a neutral site for the Big Ten Championship. And, sorry, I lost some words there. But before they play Nebraska, we have to have Nebraska win out first. Because if Nebraska doesn't win out, I just don't think it's going to be convincing enough to even think about putting Michigan State in the playoff.
Well, there's a little bit of a trickery that goes with looking at the teams out of Michigan State. Michigan State, I think, will be like probably around. I'm just going to go by the AP poll instead of the playoff poll right now, even though the AP poll has nothing to do with the playoff because it's just an independent poll, basically. But it's got to be somewhat similar. And Michigan State's number, they're actually, last week they were number 8 in the college football playoff poll, but they're number 7 in AP poll that came out yesterday. And above them is TCU, Oregon, Alabama, Auburn, Florida State, Mississippi State. And obviously you can't argue with Mississippi State, Florida State, or Oregon being above them. But Auburn and Alabama, of course, are going to play each other in the Iron Bowl. So one of those teams is going to be a 2-loss team, which I don't see a 2-loss team making it. in my opinion. I would take a one-loss Michigan State over a two-loss Auburn or Alabama any day, because you got to take teams with one loss over teams with two losses. I'm sorry, two losses. So one of those is going to lose. And then Mississippi State plays, they play Bama. So basically, I guess if Bama beats Mississippi State, then the only undefeated team left is Florida State. And then if Mississippi State beats Alabama and then Alabama beats Auburn, I don't think Michigan State has to worry about either one of them. And I think Ole Miss is going to lose again, because they haven't looked very well after their hot start. Last week, they barely squeaked by last week against Auburn. And they have to play Mississippi State. So I think Mississippi State has a legitimate shot at maybe going undefeated. And if they can handle Ole Miss and Alabama losses, and then Alabama holds hands are Auburn loss, and Michigan State wins out, I'd see Michigan State getting a spot. I don't know why TCU was ahead of Michigan State in the poll. And actually, Ole Miss fell behind. Ole Miss lost. So they're a two-loss team. I was looking at the stupid college football playoff, and they were one loss in that. So basically, Michigan State has to, they have a good shot. Like I said, there's a lot of scenarios. I just confused you with all that. And I made a mistake there. I said that Ole Miss is a one-loss team, and they're already a two-loss team because they lost to LSU and then they lost to Auburn back-to-back weeks after the 7-0 start. So they'd have to win out basically to even have a shot, and they have to play Alabama still. So I don't know, or they have to play Mississippi State.
All right, so here's what I got, guys. Nick made some solid points. I'm a Michigan State, a Michigan fan first, Michigan State fan second. Of course, I'm not. Some Michigan fans like to cheer against Michigan State just for the sake of cheering against the Spartans, interstate rivalry, but I'm not one of those guys. I like to see Big Ten teams represented, and I like to see the Spartans represented because, once again, I'm a Michigander. So, in my mind, to have Michigan State make the playoff, here's my projected rankings. Number one, I think Florida State's going to pass up Mississippi State. Mississippi State has had a couple convincing victories. They beat Texas A&M by 17 at home. They went to LSU and defeated the Tigers by 5, and then they beat Auburn by 15. So, I mean, that, you know, the SEC teams are always considered tough, and if Mississippi State can go to Alabama and beat Alabama, that's just if Mississippi State can beat Alabama, they're number one.
It's like a big jungle gym because they all play each other. But basically, yeah. What happens is all the SEC teams, in my opinion, for the most part, the outside, I think Auburn and Alabama are the two really good teams that I've seen. Mississippi State right now. But the thing about Mississippi State is they're not like as proven to me because they're a younger team and it's their first year kind of at the top. But so those three are the cream of the crop right now, and I think all the other ones kind of get overrated. Like, especially, like, Ole Miss, I think they were overrated.
Yeah, I definitely think Ole Miss is overrated. They started off with an easy schedule. They now have two losses. Sorry to interrupt, but as I was saying, if Mississippi State can beat Alabama, they're an obvious number one. Then Florida State, and Alabama will have two losses. So I'm not sure about them. So if Mississippi State beats Alabama, I got Mississippi State, Florida State, Oregon, and then Michigan State.
Yeah, and realistically, at most, you're probably only going to see two SEC teams just with the way the schedule plays out the rest of the way. So that leaves a spot open for two at least non-SEC teams. And I think Florida State's a for sure shoe-in. And then Oregon's has a pretty good chance. So that's why Michigan State really needs Auburn to lose again or Alabama to lose again, because at that point, one of those teams is going to fall, or they need both of them to lose again, really. Unless Mississippi State loses twice. Like I said, it's a big jungle gym. I went through all the things and confused you and myself, basically, but they need Auburn or Alabama is going to lose, so there's only going to be two teams. So if Auburn loses again along the way and beats Alabama, Michigan State's in. So they just need a few things to happen and to win out. But really, Michigan State, they got to go out there and take care of their business, and when they can't really control the outcome of another game.
And the games for Michigan State, I know I am I stress this a lot, but a big thing for me if I'm on that committee is, you know, one, the strength of schedule, obviously, but two, like, how convincing the victories are. You have to go out there, play good defense, put up a lot of points, just, you know, no mercy in a situation like this for the Spartans. You just have to keep throwing points upon the board. I know it's college football, but some people are still worried about sportsmanship. Sportsmanship goes out the window. So
it's pretty competitive.
So, you know, for me, for this to, for Michigan State to make the playoff, I'm saying Alabama has to beat Mississippi State, give them a loss, give them the same record as MSU, just to even throw it up there, because Oregon makes it over MSU unless they lose again, just because of the simple fact that they beat them head-to-head. So, I'll give you a couple scenarios. If Nick doesn't have anything to add, I think we're going to move on.
That's about it. Go Green, go on.
All right, so our next segment is going to discuss the Detroit Lions and their standing in the NFC North at the halfway point. We're going to do a little quick recap of their games this far, and also Nick and I are going to give a like a player that has impressed us the most and the player that has been the most disappointing thus far. All right, so first I'd like to go through their schedule. Just a quick overview and recap of all their games this far. So they opened up the season September 8th, Monday Night Football. It was a big deal for us Lions fans. You don't really get to see the Lions on Monday Night Football that much. They beat the New York Giants 35-14. This game really, you know, it helped my outlook on things, and it was nice to see Stafford go out there and play well. And, of course, the Lions got a couple interceptions. I believe Rasheen Mathis got one. You know, but it's not a huge surprise because the other man does throw a lot of interceptions. Do you have anything you want to add about that game that you can remember?
They just looked really impressive. And the Giants, a lot of people think they're going to be bad, but they've been pretty much average to this point through 3-4. And they've lost to the four best teams in this conference, which includes the Lions.
Yeah.
Then they played Carolina looked atrocious.
Yeah, I didn't think the defense was the problem in that game. The defense, you know, we talked a couple weeks ago about how the defense was number one, and it was still at that point because they played great against the Giants, and after that game it still was in my mind. I think the stats back me up on that. The defense wasn't the problem. Stafford couldn't get anything going. Kelvin Johnson was still fighting off an injury, which has been resting for the next few weeks now, so praying that he's healthy after this bye week, back to play the Dolphins. So yeah, defense wasn't the problem that game. Offense definitely was slacking. Week 3, we played the Packers, and this is a game that really impressed me. You know, we couldn't beat the Packers
with
Aaron Rodgers, correct? And that's what we did. You know, Stafford went out there. He was having a little bit of trouble getting started early, but we ended up being up by 5 at halftime. We got a safety and a field goal. And then our defense was really impressive. You know, they didn't score a touchdown in any time but the first quarter. So 119-7, Lions moved to 2-1. Also took sole possession of first place in the NFC North after that game.
Then they played the Jets, and I'm going to be honest, I can't add much into this game, because that was the same day that the Tigers were going for the Central, and I watched that over this.
Yeah, I watched both. The Tigers game, you know, I was definitely going back and forth. The Lions' offense came out hot. They put up a field goal in the first. They actually traded field goals with the Jets. The Jets put up 3-3 after the first quarter. The Lions came out. Scored a couple touchdowns early in the second. They picked off Geno Smith to get the second one. And then their defense just looked, I mean, pretty good. I mean, if you allow 17 points a game, you should win you the football game if your offense does the job. And then week 5.
That was a disappointing game. The Tigers got eliminated, too. That was a bad day for Detroit.
Yeah, it came their second loss of the year already.
Lions would be 7-1
right now.
Yeah, it was very disappointing. Our kicking was still having problems. I believe it was still Freese at that time. He missed a couple more field goals. It was a very disappointing day for the Lions. The Bills, I'm not taking anything away from the Bills. They were...
It was Henry that game, wasn't it?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Unless Henry only got one game because we signed Crater for the same
time. I just want to forget about that game in general. But either way, I still have nightmares about the Bills game. But, you know, not taking anything away from the Bills. That was Kyle Orton's first game. He played a heck of a football game. The offensive coordinator called a good game. But, you know, they won by a field goal. Late field goal at that. Their kicker hit. He was like a 60-yard field goal to beat the Lions in the fourth quarter as time expired. And they carried Jim Schwartz off the field, which that was just a classless act. I mean, people talk about Detroit having no class, but that was very classy. I'm doing little quotes in my hands right now. Air quotes, classy Jim Schwartz, you know. Good game, but yeah.
And then we're on our 3-game winning streak that we're on right now with the two impressive comeback wins. But the first game was against the Minnesota Vikings, who could not score a touchdown against the Lions.
Yeah, I actually did not get to watch this game. Had to work, so...
I watched most of it, though, and the Lions' offense hasn't been overly impressive this year, but they put up 17 points, and, I mean, playing the Vikings, that's all you really needed. The defense is above average at this point. We know that they're pretty much above average when they can hold the Vikings... without Adrian Peterson, a low amount of points, and they only got three. So that was a pretty solid road to win, but a road win that you should have had anyways. And then we move into the game against the Saints, where they were down. It looked like they were going to lose to an older-looking Drew Brees, and against the Saints team, that wasn't very great.
Yeah, this Saints game did not impress me whatsoever. Bottom line is we got the W. We were down 10-3 at halftime. Neither team scored in the first, so that was okay. But the first, we just kind of traded punts away. Like I said, down 10-3 at halftime, traded touchdowns on the third. And then down 17-10. Actually, I think we were down 20-10 at one point. Stafford threw an interception. We thought the game was over. And it was a deflected one of those. I'm starting to call it typical Stafford interceptions, you know. He throws the ball, the wide receiver has his hands on it, and bounces off their hands, literally. He doesn't drop it. He doesn't, tip it up in the air. It literally just bounces off his hands, like a trampoline or something. It would just bounce off his hands, land right in the hands of the defender, and that is the Matt Stafford interception. And he threw an interception late, and then Drew Brees threw an interception late. We took advantage of that, and then the Saints fumbled the ball and gave the Lions the chance to get the victory, and they took it. The Saints' defense was very impressive this game up until the fourth quarter, and their offense certainly didn't help them in the fourth quarter either with those two turnovers I just talked about. But Lions got the victory 5-2.
An hour to the Matt Prater winning us game 0. Even though I missed the field goal, the Lions pretty much... I only got to watch the first half of the game because... Funny story, Austin will vouch for me here. I never leave games early, even if it's a blob, because you never know when that miracle comeback will happen. But the game was in London at 9:30, and I watched the first half, and I go, there's no way the Lions are going to win this game. I'm getting an extra hour of sleep. And sure enough, I woke up, and Matt Prater's about ready to kick a field goal, and I watched him kick it through the uprights to win the game. And then I went onto Twitter real quick to, look at our feed on our sports thing, and I saw that the Lions actually had a penalty in it. After the game, Stafford thought it was a runoff, he said, by rule, but it turns out it wasn't. It turns out it wasn't a 10-second runoff for a delay of game, and it ended up messing up so bad that they won the game, I guess.
Yeah, you don't see Jim Caldwell was not necessarily happy about that penalty, as he's not happy about any penalties that the Lions received. He's trying to put some discipline into that team and lay off the penalties, which have been a major source of dismay for the Lions in past years. You know, they give up, they get a lot of penalties, give up free yards. You just can't do that when you're an average football team.
Yeah.
But they beat the Falcons 22-21. Like Nick said, he watched the first half. The Falcons were down, or the Falcons were up. Sorry, the Falcons were winning 21-0. And I caught the first half of this game before I went off to do some errands and such.
Even in the first half, when the Lions did good in this game, they messed it up because I'm pretty sure Mathis had a 102-yard return, but there was a penalty on it, and it got called back.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was
that led to Turner's Steven Jackson's touchdown around the second after that penalty.
Yeah, that game was just really disappointing on the Lions' part. But really, the Saints and the Falcons game, they won by 2 points combined. They won each game by 1 point. And they really could have, if they just played fundamentally sound football and they played their brand of actual football without making as many mistakes as they did, those would be easy wins. But we're going to look ahead. Their schedule coming up is against the Dolphins, and then they go to Arizona and New England in a tough road trip. Then they come back home for 3 games against the Bears on Thanksgiving, and then the Bucks and the Vikings, and then they go on the road against two division rivals, the Bears and the Packers. Looking at this game, just looking at the realistic outlook, I would say 5-3. I'd say that all the games at home are definitely winnable. I think they can win one of the road games because the Bears are not that great this year, and I think they can squeeze out, even if the Bears beat them, they could squeeze out a win in one of those 4 road games. But so realistically, I think this 11-5 record looks good, and I think that'll definitely be enough to make the playoffs for them. And like I said, I would go with the 5-3 for the second half if I had to make a prediction.
Yeah, I also see them losing only 3 of these last 8 games.
The same ones?
I'd say the at the Cardinals is going to be tough. The Cardinals, you know, they continue to amaze me. They're a fundamentally sound football team. They have a good defense, a good front seven, a good secondary with Patrick Peterson back there. They just signed him to an extension. This offseason, he'll be there for a while, hold it down.
They still got Fitzgerald, and they've got a good Palmer is in the top elite quarterback, but he's a bit better in the quarterback too.
Yeah, so I see him losing the game against the Cardinals, and it seems like we always lose in Arizona for some reason.
Yeah.
I don't think they can beat the Patriots. And I see them losing one of the games to the Bears. I only say that because I think it's hard to beat a team twice. However, I kind of contradict myself because I see them beating the Packers, even in Green Bay at Lambeau. So, I think we're just going to get some, I think when our full team is healthy and, you know, the defensive line gets cleared up. And I think Ndamukong Suh, once he sees this team as a legitimate playoff contender, he's going to be more focused on the football aspect of his career rather than who he's going to play for next year.
Yeah. And the Lions, as long as they take care of business to beat the Dolphins at home, they're going to be 7-2 and pretty much one of the top teams in the NFC, so hopefully you can enjoy that. But I'm going to break into my most impressive player so far is Golden Tate. I actually have him in my fantasy league that I'm about to be 7-2 in. It's the first time I've actually ever been successful at fantasy football, even though I think I've taken it a little more serious this year. But I picked up Golden Tate in probably like the 7th or 8th round, I think. And that was a really good pickup for me because he's ended up being my best wide receiver. But he's had that impact on the Lions, too. Just to think, you know, the offense hasn't been great in the first place, especially with Calvin Johnson out because he's a huge part. But without Golden Tate, this team is probably about 500, I think. I think that pickup is a lot more key than most people think. And then my biggest disappointment is all the kickers. I think Matt Prater's going to come and settle into that role in the last 4 games of the year and hopefully in the playoffs will look like the same old Matt Prater, but I think he needs a little time to settle into the role because he hasn't kicked in a while with his suspension. But Alex Henry and Nate Freeze were easily disappointing. And we would be 7-1, really, if we had good kickers because we win that Buffalo game because we missed, I think, 3 kicks in that game.
Yep.
So,
9 points put ahead on the board.
So the GOATs or the least impressive part has been the kickers, but I'm gonna put the least amount of weight on Prater probably there in that aspect of it.
Yeah, I had to think about this one for a little while because Nick, you know, Golden Tate's the obvious option here. We wouldn't have won that game against New Orleans without him. But I'm gonna go with a defensive player on the other side of the ball. I'm gonna go with Ziggy Ansah. You know, I had to. I did mention him in the preseason edition of our podcast. We talked about what the Lions had to do, and I did mention Ziggy had to step up, and he's done exactly that. I pulled up the stats. In 8 games, he has 26 total tackles, 16 solo tackles, and 10 assisted, but he has 4.5 sacks, and I think that's a big part of his game is he's got to put some pressure on the opposing team's quarterback, and if Fairley and Sue can't get through the line, and Sue, it looks like Sue's going to be gone after this year, especially because, you know, he's going to want some big money because he's becoming one of the dominant defensive tackles in the NFL. Ziggy's going to have to kind of step into a nice role at defensive end, along with the veteran Jason Jones. But he's my, you know, the player that I think has done very well for the Lions this year. And the player I'm going to say is the most disappointing. This is obviously debatable because what you're looking for in players is definitely different from person to person. But I'm going to go out on a limb and say Kelvin Johnson has been my most disappointing player this year. Now, I know that it's very, you know, questionable, and why I say that is just because we're paying him. He's a top-paid wide receiver. He's one of the best wide receivers in the league. I know injuries, I know how to keep my players safe, but, I mean, he's just in the games that he did play, he wasn't the dominant Kelvin Johnson we've seen, and now he's just been injured, so, I mean.
Hopefully the bye week helps with that, just speaking of comeback healthy. Same with all the guys, because in London when they played the Falcons, they were basically a really injured offensive team. I mean, Kellen Davis got signed as a tight end earlier that week, and every tight end above him on the depth chart, he was fourth on the depth chart, and every tight end above him got hurt. Pettigrew, Ebron, and Fourier. So the Lions just need their guys back and to remain healthy. That's a huge thing in football. So I think they're going to be healthier after the break, and that'll help too. And I think Kelvin Johnson getting a week off and getting off these last couple weeks will give him time to recover from an injury. Hopefully he'll come back as good as ever. So
I sure hope so. I hope you proved me wrong. You know, I heard some people talking about it, and I just wanted to point that out that, you know, he has been kind of disappointing. I know he broke the receiving yard record a couple years ago, so that definitely helps his case as a player. But this year in itself, you know, I would have liked to see him play at least 15 or, you know, at least 14 or 15 games.
I think he's going to come back and be his usual self in the second half, but we'll see. I'm actually pretty optimistic on the Lions after their big start. I mean, they're a second half collapse type of team, and sometimes it changes and sometimes it stays the same. But I just think this year that the schedule presents itself for them to at least win 10 or 11 games at the minimum, and that might just be about squeaking the playoffs. And like I said, a wild card team could go deep in the playoffs this year, I think, but the Seahawks not having as good of a year, and the 49ers having a really disappointing year, and they were the two favorites, kind of, in the NFC to do well. And if they're not performing at the standards, I think that the NFC is a wide open for a champion. So, I mean, I'm not saying the Lions are going to win it, but I'm being optimistic with them.
Okay, so to close off the segment, I know Nick has been kind of flip-floppy on the subject of the NFC North title, and I kind of like to mess with him about that. But I'm still going to stick with the Lions. I think they could finish 11-5 with 2 victories over the Packers, and that's what you have to do to win your division, is beat, you know, the next best team. So I think they're going to go 11-5, win the NFC North, and top off a good year with maybe even a playoff victory. This past week in the baseball world, The 2014 MLB season came to a close with the San Francisco Giants winning and yet another World Series title.
But it was their closest call yet.
Yes. Coming into this World Series, I predicted the Royals in 7. Nick predicted the Giants in 5. Unfortunately, he still beat me because the Giants won.
The team outdoes the number of games.
Yeah,
we kind of
discussed this, and we decided that the team definitely outweighs the number of games, even though he underpredicted the number of games, which I don't know. Which, anyways, moving on.
Well, I just wanted to congratulate the Giants. They're a deserving team, even though they're a wild card. They had a really good year, and they're going to be remembered as a dynasty, I think. Even if they don't win again, and even when they didn't win any back-to-back titles, they won 3 in 5 years, and that's a big deal. And Buster Posey, he's amazing to me. He's played 4 full years in the majors, and he's won 3 World Series in those 4 full seasons in the major leagues. The only year he played the full year and didn't win the World Series was the last year, so that's pretty amazing on Buster Posey's part. And of course, Madison Bumgarner rules the world. I mean, he's still not better than Clayton Kershaw by any means, but he's definitely becoming a 1A, and he's becoming a postseason legend, where he's doing it right before us. So, you know, just to make a retrospect on their season, it was just really good. I mean, they weren't dominant in the regular season, but they were pretty dominant in the postseason.
All right, stop. Before we move on, I saw somebody refer to Madison Bumgarner as another Mr. October. Would you go that far?
Not yet. He had one amazing postseason. He's been amazing in the World Series, and he's definitely one of the better World Series pitchers of all time. But he's still pretty fairly young, and he's going to have opportunities. Even if the Giants go into a swoon now and don't make the playoffs for 5 years, he's still going to have opportunities because he's only 25 or 6. And he's a really good player, so he's going to have other opportunities. But I want him to do well in a couple more series, because the postseason is a small sample size, no matter what. And it is an important thing, but I just want the sample size to be just a smidge bigger before I go that far. But the Giants season was great. I mean, when you think about it, other players were solid. Pence was good. Crawford was a solid shortstop. Ishikawa, he was a good role player, and he had that amazing moment for them. Raver Blanco stepped up. Pat Pagan was hurt, but he had a good year. Don't forget about him. And Panic was really underrated at second. And Brandon Bell had a moment too in NLDS. And he was hurt most of the year, but he came back and did well in the playoffs. And of course, they were led by Buster Posey on offense. And then their pitching was really good. And the Royals had a good year too. They reminded me of the 06 Tigers this year. They fell a little bit short. And I think the Royals are probably going to miss the playoffs next year because they're going to lose Shields and Butler and Aoki in free agency. And their payroll's due to go up, so they might add one semi-big name. I don't think they're going to get any huge name free agents or go after them. But there's rumors of them having Moustakas and Gordon and Hosmer up for the right amount. So I don't think that's the right move. But if they got like a good deal and got a good end of a deal for that, that would be, I guess, a good trade. But the Royals should stick with what they have. I just think next year they're going to experience a little bit of regression. But if they build on their team, they could become a playoff contender again, I think. But losing Shields and 2 of your everyday hitters is going to be a lot. And I think the Tigers and Indians are both really strong teams. And the AL Central used to be pretty much a joke, but now it's one of the stronger divisions in baseball. So the Royals are going to have a tough go of it next year, but I still think they're going to be a winning and solid team. And they, of course, they have a chance to go back to the playoffs because they made it to the World Series. There's always that chance. But, and then one last thing before I go into the offseason here, talk about the World Series. Alex Gordon hit that really nice line drive single off Bumgarner in the ninth, and it looked like it was pretty much the Royals' only chance with the way Bumgarner was throwing a superhuman on 2 days' rest. Gordon made it to third because the ball got past Blanco in center, and then Juan Perez kicked it. As he backed him up. And a lot of people wanted Gordon to go home, but he would have been a dead duck at home. There's no argument. Watch the tape. And if not, think about the average time is about, like, I think 15 seconds for a semi-fast runner to make it home.
And Gordon is not slow, but he's not fast. He's kind of in between. And he would have been a dead duck at home plate. So, I mean, sure, it might have been their only chance, but when your only chance is the only way that you'd score is if some miraculous missed throw happened to the shortstop and then another missed throw happened to the catcher, it's better to play it safe and hope that maybe Perez can get another miraculous hit. But the Royals were kind of doomed because Perez wasn't the right hitter to have up in that situation. Perez is a bright future, but he's not a guy who takes a walk and is very patient. He's more of a hit it hard and swing early and at everything guy. And Bumgarner threw him five high fastballs, and Perez popped out on the fifth out and didn't stand a chance. But we're going to, that leads us into hot stove season. All right, so the MLB hot stove season is going to start. And actually, free agency starts tonight in about, as we're recording, about 2 hours. It starts after 11:59 tonight. But I'm going to be covering a lot of teams throughout the winter on this podcast. I'm going to go three teams at a time. It's going to be a preview and a review type of thing. Right now, it's going to be more of a preview. And when I get to the end team, so it'll be a review. You know what we don't cover, I'd like to cover on the site. So somehow we have like a Yankees fan listening today, because if they're one of the teams we're going to look at, and you want to review their moves, I'll try to do that on our website. And our website is notsofamoussports.wordpress.com, exactly how you think it's spelled, not so famous sports. And that's, we didn't do anything odd to you, but so you can go there and check that out. But I mean, it'd be too overwhelming to do all the teams in one show, so I'm just going to do it that way, and whatever, you know, doesn't get covered, if I can get it on our site, because I want to start to get back into rating, like, that kind of a thing. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm ranking the free agents with the predictions. But like I said, I was going to start with some teams out of the AL East, because, I don't know, like, when you see a series starting, usually they start in either the AL or the NL East, because, I don't know why, it's just always been that way. So I'm going to start with the Yankees. Who are bound to have a busy offseason. They have two ace pitchers from each side of the rubber. They have CC and Masahiro, but both are coming off injuries, and CC's coming off a bad season. CC couldn't figure it out, and he was hurt too the past 2 years, actually. So he's been coming off some tough times. And then the Yankees have a lot of free agents. Corona is a free agent. McCarthy, Hadley, they just have a lot of key free agents, so it'll be important for them to have a good offseason this year if they want to compete. Nice to meet you, the third place team again, kind of like they were this year. But they're going to be in the market for one of the three top pitchers in the last year, Shields and Scherzer. And if I had to rank the likelihood of all those pitchers landing there, I would rank it in the order of probably I'd go Shields, Scherzer, or Lester in that order. I don't think Lester has much of a chance, but the top two definitely have a really good chance of going there. And the Yankees need rotation help. If Corona decides to come back, I think he'd either come back to New York or go back to Los Angeles to do Spatz's pitch for another year. Los Angeles might make more sense for Corona because they're probably the better team and more guaranteed of a playoff spot. But he could come back to the Yankees for another year because they're willing to pay a lot. But the rotation definitely has some things that need to be sorted out. Sean Green did pretty good for the rotation in the past, so we'll just have to see with the Yankees. And then the bullpen, David Robertson is arguably their biggest free agent, and it'll be interesting to see what he does. They have Don Betances in the bullpen to take over if Robertson moves, but it'll certainly be a priority to get Robertson back because he's a really good pitcher and they want to have a solid bullpen. Having him with Betances at the back end would be huge. But if he walks, it's not the end of the world. There's always relievers to sign, and it's pretty hard to predict. Relievers are probably the hardest thing to predict, for, in my opinion, because they're always in demand because every team needs a good bullpen. There's always like at least one opening in a bullpen that a team could get. So I like the I like the Yankees going out and maybe getting a smaller name reliever. But their main priorities to re-sign guys are Hadley and Robertson. And then in the offseason, with Ichiro leaving, or deciding whether or not to play another year, but he's probably not going to be back in New York, I don't think, because he wants to get playing time to get to 3,000 hits. So the Yankees could do various amount of things. I think one thing that makes sense, a scenario I dreamt up in my head, playing pretend GM, is that they could trade Ian Clark and Manny Vanuelos, possibly, for Dominic Brown, because the Phillies seem like they're going to be rebuilding, and Dominic Brown would fit that the Yankee Stadium short porch. He has a lot of power, and I could see him being very successful there in the outfield. But they have another year of Beltran, and he could play outfield. I think he's going to DH most of the year. He's getting really old. He's not very mobile anymore. And then they got Gardner and Alsbury that are going to be in two of the outfield spots for sure. Another thing they could do is see if Aaron Judge could play. He's kind of like, I know we talked about Stephen Moy on the show. He's kind of like the right-handed, more disciplined, possibly a little bit better version of Stephen Moya. And he's got impressive power, so we'll see what they do there. There's various trade partners. Andre Ethier might make sense because the Dodgers basically now five outfielders. And Jack Peterson looks like he's ready. They have five capable starting outfielders on their team, plus Scott Lance, like, who's like a platoon guy almost. So I like what the Yankees are could do this offseason as far as that outfield spot. And then one other thing is A-Rod's coming back to share his plan. So the middle infield's up in the air. And I actually, you're going to see that I predicted that they're going to sign Hanley Ramirez. So I think that would be a good fit, a no-brainer. I don't think that Tulowitzki will be traded this offseason unless something shocking happens, which it does because it's not still season. But I still highly doubt that he'll get traded. So I think Hanley Ramirez will end up in a Yankee uniform. I think that if they go after a guy like Ricky Weeks on a one-year deal, that would be a good, smart option for them at second base because they don't really have anybody in the wings at second. So it'll be an interesting offseason. They're set at catcher with Brian McCann, and plus they have Jared Murphy and Gary Sanchez as prospects in Austin Roma. And I wanted to make sure I didn't confuse with Andrew. And Francisco Cervelli's backup. So catcher's a spot there for sure. So the Yankees, even with all these moves, I'm going to say third place is my early offseason prediction. But it'll be an interesting offseason for them. Now, with the Tampa Bay Rays, I think they're going to, the main thing they have to worry about is Joel Peralta and picking up his offer. I think they're going to do that. And I think they might go out and sign a few bullpen arms. But other than that, I think when they made that David Price trade that they were planning for this year, because now Zobrist can move to the outfield, Nick Franklin can break in at second base, and Matt Joyce can move to DH, and the Rays basically have a really good starting lineup. And I'd actually say they're favorites because I think everybody's sleeping on the rotation. A full year of a healthy Helixson would be huge. Chris Archer only got better last year. A full year of Drew Smiley will be huge for him. Drew Smiley's really underrated. Alex Cobb's pretty much becoming the ace there. And Matt Moore, they get him back healthy at some point next year, they're going to be in good shape. So I really like the makeup and the outlook for the Rays. And they got Jake McGee's, their big arm in the bullpen. So if Desmond Jennings breaks out, they don't really have to make any moves on the offensive side. They could maybe go after another catcher because Jose Molina, Ryan Hannigan, Kirk Casale, there's not really a sure fire starter there, but other than that, an offense they're set, and then I like them getting a reliever, but they're starting rotation set, so they'll probably sign a couple minor league fillers and hope that maybe that they can have an impact at some point this year, but I think the Rays are planning on this year.
So what do you think about their managerial situation with the, I mean, I don't want to say resignation, but the decision by Joe Madden to leave?
Well, that's interesting. Joe Madden's probably the best manager in the MLB, and I would say, like, a manager has an impact on a team, and it can be, like, it can end up being a big impact, but the impact isn't as big as the player's impact, so it's not like they lost Evan Longoria, but, you know, they did lose the genius and the brain behind their operation, but the good thing for the Rays is that Dave Martinez is their bench coach, and if I were them, I would give him the job right now, even on a blank check for 2 years and a mutual option for a third year. And I'd say, here you go, Dave. Tell us the amount you want, and we should be able to work with you here. Because he knows the team, and he's with me, and I think he's one of the guys who's been a manager and waiting for a while. He didn't
he never got a job, but I think he deserves a chance, and I think he's pretty smart. I think that if I were them, I'd go after Dave Martinez, who's Manny's bench coach. So that'll be the interesting thing. But I think if Martinez gets the job, he actually won't be like, he'll be one of the better managers in baseball, and that he won't be that much worse than Madden. So obviously, there's probably not really, there's no replacing Madden really, but Martinez can fill in a pretty good front. So that moves on. That will lead us into the last team this week, which is the Red Sox. The Red Sox will be interesting too. Is John Lester going to come back to him? It doesn't look very likely at this point. So we're going to have to see. But they're going to have an interesting offseason. They have a bunch of outfielders. Yoenis Cespedes, recently the media said that coaches say that he's uncoachable. So they might try to trade him. We discussed that last week. Yeah.
That's just another reason why I would not like to see him on the Detroit Tigers.
Well, yeah. It just depends. I don't know. Let me get that right. Cespedes, he's got a tongue twister of a name sometimes. He'll bring back a good return because they got it for John Lester. So if they do trade him, they'll bring back a good return. And they have enough outfielders to be equipped for a while. So I think they'll trade him and Jackie Bradley, maybe. We'll have to see. I don't know. But I think two outfielders go this offseason somewhere. They're going to get some help. But Alan Craig could be one of those guys, too. So that'll be interesting. I think those are the guys that they're going to trade. I really can't predict a trade for you, but they need starting pitching and relief pitching, pitching of any sort. They have a catcher coming up, at Sweetheart, and I think Velasquez. And then at first base, they have Napoli. There's no getting out of that. At second base, you have Pedroia. At shortstop, you have Bogarts. And then at third, Middlebrooks and Craig could play there. So I think their infield set, maybe they could go after a third baseman or like a platoon guy. And then Mookie Betts can play there too. So they got a lot of options at third. And then I think they might trade two outfielders this offseason, Bradley and Cespedes being the most likely. And they could bring back a good return. I think they're going to try really hard after James Shields. I think that the James Shields sweepstakes is going to end up being a bidding war between the Red Sox and the Yankees. I just think that that's what it's going to come down to, because I don't think Lester's likely to move back to either of them. And Scherzer is possible, but I think Scherzer is going to be between the Yankees and Dodgers. And I think the Dodgers are going to get Scherzer if I had to predict if the Tigers don't swoop back.
That'd be unreal.
Yeah, but the Dodgers are looking into him, and I think that it's a very big possibility. Because I'll get into the Dodgers for one quick second, because I'm not talking about him on the show. They need a catcher, but otherwise, they're pretty much offensively set. They can let Hanley walk, basically, because D. Gordon, their second baseman, who broke out, was an all-star. He can play a shortstop. Then they have Alex Guerrero, who is a second baseman, who can play there this year. And then they got another guy from Cuba, too. That's a middle infielder, and he can be kind of the backup. And then Corey Seager is coming up, and he could either be a second baseman or shortstop, depending on where D. Gordon fits. So, and Corey Seager is one of their top prospects. So the Dodgers are going to have an interesting offseason, too. But they can definitely lose Hanley and add another pitcher and have a big three-headed monster. So they're going to be one of the interesting teams. And like I said, every year for the past 3 years now, I think I went with the Tigers-Dodgers World Series, and this is the year I think it's going to happen, is my early prediction. But the Red Sox need pitching to wrap up on them, and I think it could be a busy offseason for them and the Yankees. It could be one of those offseasons where they both spend a lot of money again, so because they both didn't win the division, they both really want to win that division, of course, because it seems almost weird when they don't do that. So that'll wrap it up on the hostile front for this week. So once again, congratulations to the Giants, and it's going to be a fun hostile. Be sure to check our site out, and we'll continue on this next week.
So once again, that website is notsofamoussports.wordpress.com. You can also reach us by Twitter at NSFSportsReport. And if you email us at nsfsportsreporters@gmail.com, we'll give you a shout out on the show and answer any questions regarding sports that you may have. So definitely get us some emails, tweets, and check out that site for us.
And then before we end the show today,
I just wanted to give a shout out to a guy who's actually listened to at least part of the show, let me know, that plays baseball in the Tigers organization, Wynton Bernard. He got added to the 40-man roster on Halloween when the Tigers released Don Kelly and let go of Andy Dirks. They placed him on waivers and they got claimed by the Blue Jays. And Bernard could really have an impact next year. I run a Tiger account on the side, and I tweeted that I think he could have an impact in 2015, and I truly believe that he could have an impact next year. He looked really impressive at West Michigan. I've got nothing but good things to say about him. He's an athletic and really good center fielder. And, you know, as long as he keeps working hard, I think he'll develop into a fine hitter. I just really like what I saw in him. He hits out of the ground a lot, gets a lot of hits, a few more line drives, and he could be a good player for the Tigers for the next few years. This year, if he gets a chance, probably won't be a starter, but more of a role player at some point. So we'll have to see. He probably might skip Lakeland at this point, though, because he's on the 40-man roster. I mean, I don't know. It's all speculation. But I see him starting off at Double-A and maybe working his way up from there this year. But shout-out to you, Witt, and all that your hard work's been paying off. And it's a pretty amazing story. We went through it. Go back and listen to, I think it was our third, fourth, or fifth podcast, somewhere in the middle there. It's one of those ones, but we went through the story. He was released by the Padres, went to a Tigers Open tryout, made a team, and now look at him, he's on the 40-man roster. So, like I said, I'm going to stick by what I said on Tiger Cotton. I think he's going to make an impact at some point this year, and he could be a guy who helps big league teams for years to come as a player. So, congrats to Wenton, and best of luck this year.
I just want to say Wenton Bernard is the man, and yep.
Hopefully we hear a 305 to my city of Comerica at some point this year.
Yeah, he gets it.
So yep, Wenton is looking good, and the Tigers let go of Dirks and Kelly, which was sad. Might have been time to see Kelly go. Dirks, the main concern is his health, but it was, you know, still kind of sad to see him go. And Evan Reed is gone. That's not really gonna hurt anybody's feelings, I don't think. And then Patrick McCoy's gone too, and he showed spots of being a good, maybe oogie type of guy, but not the biggest loss in the world. So
none of the bullpen arms are gonna hurt my feelings.
Yeah, Dirksen Kelly both had an impact in Detroit. Kelly wasn't always the greatest player, but he's always been a fan favorite. He has done things from time to time that have been pretty good. So you know, I guess to give him a moment to recognize those good things, like the home run in the ALDS in 2011 and the walk-off sack fly in 2012. And Dirks, I think he could still have a bright future.
As long as they can get healthy.
Yeah, as long as he gets healthy. So goodbye to those guys. And it's exciting to see Wenton on the club and the 40-man, hopefully on the club coming up. But I think he could have an impact this year, and he could help the Tigers in some ways that some people don't see coming. So.
All right, so before we go too long, that's the last thing we wanted to get in there. Thanks for listening to our 9th podcast next week, big number 10. Hopefully we'll get that one done this weekend for you guys.
We'll have to do something special.
Yeah, we'll have to play a little, I don't know. Well, we'll think of a new game for you guys, if that's...
Or something. We'll do something sufficient. Special for the 10th one. We need some more listeners, though, so spread the word if you're one of the two people that listen to it.
And then we got 6 downloads from Podomatic, so I don't know if Nick and his mom downloaded it, but
you're upstairs with your
grandma. Yeah, I don't know.
That's 4 right there, and then you, and then someone else. So we got one.
Someone's out there listening. So thanks for listening. We'll be back next week.